And I bring to these microphones David James for our weekly conversation together, where David and I will look at an issue confronting the Christian world, endeavor to try to come to some biblical conclusions, and then make that applicable for our everyday life. David is in India right now. We talked to you last week about that, and now he is still there for another week of teaching the Word of God at the seminary there. David, I'm hoping everything's going well. You having a good time in your teaching ministry there?
Yes, it's been a great time of ministry. This is my sixth time to India. I just finished up the course on Roman Catholicism and getting ready to head back to the United States.
Well, have safe journeys as you come back. We'll talk to you when you get home. David, a couple of weeks ago, we discussed extremism and the Islamization of Europe. And now, here we are, just a week after the terrorist attacks in Paris. And since you're finishing up your time there in India, is what's happening in Europe going to affect your trip back to the United States in any way, you think?
Well, I didn't think so until about an hour ago, and I happened to be on the internet and tried to work out my departure from here, which would have allowed me to avoid actually touching down in Europe, go straight from India to the United States, and the Lufthansa strike, when they canceled my flight here and I had to go through Oman, they canceled my first flight from here, so I just had to reschedule, and I've got to go back through Frankfurt, so it has affected me and continues to affect me, and so I will have to go through Europe in the middle of all this crisis.
Yes, and many people as well traveling through Europe and very much concerned. In fact, there are people in New York City that are looking at a possible Islamic State attack as well. Well, as we've been watching the rapid advance of different types of extremism across the world, which is our focus this time, is there anything going on in India right now that also fits this type of a pattern or a scenario?
Well, actually, there is. There is a group. Their letters are RSS. They stand for a long and difficult to pronounce Hindi name, so I won't go into that, but it's, the letters are RSS. And the current prime minister, who was elected about 18 months ago, is a member of this, and he has been drawing some of the largest crowds of any world leader anywhere outside of India. He was just in Wembley Stadium. I think he had 40,000 Indians attend there, nearly 20,000 in Los Angeles, had a record of about 50,000 Indians in Dubai, and it's an ultra-nationalist party, and he's not extremely popular here in India right now, but he wants to bring back ultra-nationalism and turn India from a secular state back into a religious Hindu state, even to the point that the group would like to change the name to Hindustan.
Wow. Boy, that does not sound good. Well, we know that Hindu ideas and actually Eastern mysticism has been impacting the West for many decades now. For the sake of our listeners who may not be familiar with Hinduism, can you give us a quick summary of just a few of the most important beliefs of the Hindus?
Sure. Hinduism is a strange combination of pantheism, which teaches that everything is God, and polytheism, which says that there are multiple gods. And so actually there are about 330 million Hindu gods. People have personal gods. They pray to personal gods. So that's their view of reality. There's one God, and he's had many manifestations here on the earth. Another thing is that their goal is to have good karma so that when they are reborn, they believe in reincarnation. When they are reborn, they will be born into a higher caste. Either they will be reborn if they were an animal, they will be born as a human and then move up into the higher caste. But the ultimate goal is to become one with the ultimate reality and escape this cycle of reincarnation. So that's the ultimate basic idea.
Well, with that type of an influence on the Western part of the world, talk to us about any ways that Hinduism and Eastern thought has made its way into the church here in America.
Well, it actually has in a couple of ways, both directly and indirectly. the New Age thought actually comes out of Hinduism, and we know that that has affected philosophy in the United States, but it has also affected some churches growing more, even in both liberal churches and even some who are not so liberal, in the idea of contemplation and meditation and the type of prayers that are being done. Another thing that is happening, one day I was actually driving down the road, just down the road from where you live, driving past a church, and they were advertising yoga in the sanctuary. And I was discussing yoga with some Indians here just in the last couple of days, and they said except for the very superficial physical aspects of a few of the postures, even when you get past some of the very basic postures, you have to start adopting some of the spiritual aspects of yoga, and you cannot practice yoga to any degree without incorporating the spiritual aspects of the entire Hindu religion into parts of yoga. People think that this is kind of neutral, and it's actually going into the schools in the United States as well as into the churches. So there are a number of ways in which it's impacting the West.
And I hope and pray that we have some church people, some leaders in local churches listening to this conversation. Well, going back to the extremist group that you were mentioning earlier, the RSS, is their view on Hinduism having any sort of a major impact on Christians and the spread of the gospel there in India?
Yes, it definitely has. As I mentioned, they want to change India from a secular a nation, sometimes you'll hear it referred to as the world's largest democracy, but actually it's really becoming anything but a democracy in terms of freedom. They do not want Christian minorities to have any rights. They want this to be a state religion, just like Muslims want Sharia law. They want Hinduism to be the prevailing religious view throughout the country. And India, as a result, has gone from being a relatively open country to even over the past couple years, it would really have to be classified as a limited access country, and you even have to be careful when you come into the country. And it also affects going out even into the villages, the place where I teach, the seminary and the school where I am. Actually, it's not safe for me to actually, as a white man, to go out into nearby villages, and definitely not to preach the gospel, because radical groups could form immediately, and actually it could turn violent very quickly just about anywhere, especially out in the rural areas where I am.
Well, what about all of India? Is it dangerous for Christians right now in that country across the entire state?
It is, more so in some places than others. One of the things that I've realized is that Americans largely think of Hinduism in India in terms of Mahatma Gandhi because of his pacifism, and it was actually his pacifism that ended up causing the British Empire to lose its control over India in 1947. But actually, the second highest caste in India is the warrior class and the warrior caste. So actually there is a lot of violence that's very much possible at the highest levels, and it's even higher than the business caste. So Christians in many places, there have been places where there have been churches that have been burned. It can be very dangerous. And so even as the graduates of this seminary where I am go out to plant churches, they can be putting themselves in danger by going out and preaching the gospel.
David, I recognize that Hinduism is one of the world's oldest religions, but many people, I don't think, realize just how far back Christianity actually goes in the history of the country of India as well. Talk to us about that for a moment.
Right. There is a strong tradition, and there is actually fairly strong historical evidence that the Apostle Thomas actually ended up in southern India, a few hundred miles south of where I am right now, and he was actually martyred not too far from where I am, maybe 60 miles. This is the most Christianized part of India here and south of where I am. And another thing is a lot of people don't realize that it was actually missionary movements in the 17th, 18th, and 1900s that actually brought literacy to India and moved it from being very backward to actually having the ability to function as a more modern society. Now, it's very backward in some of the rural areas and it's still very much a third world country. But Christianity and even the Bible itself has had a tremendous impact in improving the life throughout all of India over the past 200 or 300 years.
Well, praise the Lord for that, and keep on keeping on there for the Christian community in India. Of course, the world's attention is right now on the Middle East and Europe, but Islam certainly has pretty much of a strong presence in parts of Asia like Indonesia. What's the overall situation with Islam there in India?
It's sort of interesting. One, they are still a minority, but yet they amount to about 14% of the population. So in raw numbers, it's nearly 200 million. So that's actually, in raw numbers, a very large number. Also, something that a lot of people in America don't remember is that Pakistan, which is now is an Islamic state, was partitioned out of India in 1947 when the British Empire lost control. And Pakistan, being an Islamic country, it is actually the only Islamic country that has nuclear weapons. So here you have a situation where India has nuclear weapons, Pakistan has nuclear weapons, and there's tremendous battles going on concerning Islam, and there's even been reports since the attacks in Paris where people are concerned about ISIS having gaining a foothold in Pakistan, which would give them a foothold in a country with nuclear weapons.
Boy, if I'm understanding what you're telling us, India has a large enough Muslim population to be probably the largest Muslim country any place in the world. Well, with India having such a large percentage of the world's population, well over 1 billion people, it would seem there will almost have to be some of the end times implications. Any thoughts that you have since you've been there about how this is all going to possibly play out?
In thinking about this, I think there are two possible ways. One would be geopolitical, and that's related to what I was just talking about. If ISIS and more radicals get a hold of Pakistan, and they're already radicals in Pakistan, then what that might mean for causing India to be in trouble, and in fact the whole region in nuclear terms could be a problem. But I think there's also another thing. We know that halfway through the tribulation that the Antichrist is going to enter into the temple and declare himself to be God. And the Hindu view of Jesus is that he is one of the incarnations or avatars of God. And so it would not be that difficult for the Antichrist to persuade really the entire Hindu nation that he is one of the incarnations of God, and he could have an influence. It would allow him to have an influence over this country of 1 billion people. I think that's a very real possibility as we think about the terrible times that will happen under the Antichrist during that 7-year tribulation period.
The stage being set not only in the Middle East and Europe for end times activities as foretold in the Bible to be fulfilled, also in India as well. David, thank you for this very important report. Do be safe as you travel back. We'll talk to you when you get back to America and with another conversation.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. It's always great to be with you.